Right now it is time for us to be joined by David and Marcy from, or Marcy and David, from theberkshireedge.com. A one-stop to find out what's going on in and around the South County area. Also a great chronological calendar of coming events and more. 24 hours a day is there for you at berkshireedge.com. We say good morning to Marcy and David. Good morning.
Well, good morning. It's actually 28 hours a day, it feels like that.
Well, that's what it felt like the first hour in here this morning. It's, you know, it's always the worst thing to come in feeling fit and vinegar, and six things go wrong right away.
And then did they really this morning?
Yeah, first hour. The first hour was like just had
what
I been.
What time is your first hour?
Well, I get in here at 5. But the first hour on the air is at 6, and that's when everything decided to go haywire. But we got through it, and here we are the last hour, and like I said, I'm inhaling.
You're there by yourself?
Yourself? Well, early in the morning? Oh, absolutely. Who else would get up at 3:30 in the morning to come in here? No one else would.
Right. Yeah,
as a matter of fact, we had two other radio stations in town. They left. They left. I'm the only one crazy enough to do this. Just right. Like you guys are the only ones crazy enough to do what you do.
Yeah, that's right.
No, we're thinking about that.
Well, we're talking about that.
We feel very pleased with it, however. Yep. And I'm sure you do, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we provide and it's satisfying to provide a good community service.
Absolutely.
Which we think we do.
Absolutely.
And I think you do also.
Yeah, a needed community service, though, because without information and without news, where are you going to be? All right, well, let's get to the stories at theberkshireedge.com. And like I say to people, when we talk about these stories, we only talk about just a few select stories.
We put up, five or six stories a day.
But we have an archive that every story we've ever done is there. If people want to, search an archive on a particular subject or person or topic or whatever, it's all up there.
You just put in the keyword
and
search.
All right, so we'll start off talking.
Advantages of our online.
Yeah, we'll start off talking about the three stories that you have all about the housing crisis in the Berkshires.
Yeah. Should I begin, David?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm sure that your audience in Connecticut has
same thing.
The same thing. And we have a terrible problem that the cost of housing here has skyrocketed, in part because people are, second homeowners are buying up property. Many, and some of them are for Airbnb. They're buying them for Airbnbs, which means that local people don't have places to live. But there are a lot of reasons, and some of them have to do with the amount of regulation. So we actually have three stories from the last week, all having to do with housing. The first one that we talked about is a new report. There's an organization called One Berkshire, which is an organization that brings together people to try to focus on economic development in the Berkshires, and they have had a task force working on housing for the last 6 or 7 months, and they have finally come out with it. Not finally, they've come out with a report, which is called A Housing Vision for the Berkshires, which you can get to, through our story. Or by going to the OneBerkshires.com, I think it is, where they have made a list of what are all the obstacles to housing development in the Berkshires and what are some ways to overcome it. And they also make a plea to people to recognize the problem and to speak out against it and work against it. So they're urging people to become active in their communities, to speak out at their local select board meetings or their local
town meetings,
or planning board meetings. because the situation is becoming quite desperate. And they, you know, as they say, this is not just an abstract issue for somebody over there, but everybody that you know is struggling with a housing problem, and it's also a very big problem for employers. That, you know, we can't, I mean, everybody's got, you know, help wanted signs, and and people can't move here because they can't afford to live here. As wonderful as the place is to live, that you people can't afford it. So we have, first, we have, an article about the story from the study that One Berkshire put out. Then we have a regular column called It's Not That Simple, in which a select board member named Ed Abrams and a local architect named Pedro Pachano have a regular radio program on a little low-power radio station here in Great Barrington, even littler, I think, than Robin Hood Radio. And we then publish the transcript of their conversation in The Edge. And this week they spoke with a developer, a local developer and property manager, who was talking about all the hurdles you have to face when you try to build new housing in the Berkshires, how impossible it is. You know, and he said that, you know, in past days, when somebody retired, what they would do is they would build a multifamily house, and they would live in one of the apartments and rent out the other two, and that was income. And that happened all the time, and it provided housing for us, and relatively inexpensive housing. Now, you know, if you want to build something, it costs you $100,000 just to apply to the regulatory agencies that permit you to go forward, and nobody can afford that. And it's another reason why housing, can't get built. There are environmental studies and social impact studies and traffic studies and code regulations, this developer says, and the planning boards imperiously reject these. And
well, there is another side to this.
Okay.
And then building codes and zoning plans were all created in order to create livable spaces, and so that there wasn't urban sprawl or developments that put way too much pressure on the local infrastructure. So, I mean, there's a good reason for zoning,
right. Right.
And for land use plans, in which the Berkshires have been a leader in developing as a way of encouraging responsible development.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, this is zoning and land use planning in our town plan, in our countywide plan, is all done with the purpose of maintaining the character of the Berkshires. So it's
this is true.
So it's a good idea. That's what,
right.
I'm trying to get.
But I think, both this particular developer, who of course is a developer, but also...
Developers hate zoning. They hate these regulations.
Of course. But the One Berkshire report also points to, such a tangle of regulation that it becomes very difficult. I mean, that's one of the issues. I mean, it's only one of the issues, but it is an issue.
Are a number of steps that you have to go through, but that's the price of doing business.
And that's on top of the cost of lumber now. Lumber now is like 300% higher than it was a couple of years ago. So you add these costs onto it, and you You know what? Just buy a house if you can find it, because it's a lot of money.
Find one.
I know, that's
the
whole thing. Yep.
I mean, you can't find a house to buy.
Yeah.
Or they have become so expensive. You know, I was speaking to one of the men who was resurfacing our driveway the other day, who said that, you know, his father lives in a house in Great Barrington that belonged to his grandmother, and when his father dies, he'll probably inherit it. And he can't afford to live in Great Barrington, although he grew up in Great Barrington. He said the taxes on the house are too high. I guess it's mainly the taxes, because he would own
the taxes house. Are based on the worth of the house, of the house.
Right.
And the values have just gone sky high.
Right. And it's, you know, and it's more than the people who've been living there for generations can afford.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult situation.
On so many different levels.
It's a complicated situation. So, you know, we're... And then we have a third story, which is, we've been developing a section called Business Monday, where we're trying to, you know, write very interesting and varied business articles that all come out on Monday, sort of like our Real Estate Friday section. And we had a very interesting article this week about a business up in Adams called B&B Micro Manufacturing. And these are three local guys who all grew up together. They went to preschool together and through their high school graduation. And the father of one of them was a builder, and so two of them went off to work in finance, and one worked at the New York Stock Exchange. And one of them stayed with his father and learned construction trades, and they have come together and they've got this company called B&B Micro Manufacturing, where they're building tiny homes. And these are, you know, I forget what the square footage is, but these are all very tiny homes that also can fit on a flatbed truck and be taken everywhere. Now, they are not that cheap, but they can turn them out really fast. I mean, they can build about 1.75 homes per day. They are, I mean, there is a whole tiny home movement to remind people that being surrounded by, you know, material possessions doesn't necessarily make you happy. And if you can streamline and keep yourself focused on what's important, you can be very happy in a tiny home, which gives you shelter and a pleasant environment. And, you know, so maybe this is the answer.
Hello, guys. You there?
Hello?
I'm here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thought we cut it out there.
Good.
All right. Well, we'll move on from that because
that's our house.
I want to move on to the airport again because, you know, I just don't get it. I just don't get the grounds that these people come up with. And, you know, we had somebody file a frivolous suit against us with the FCC, and it was frivolous, and we knew we would win. We won. We had to hire an attorney. It cost us $10,000 for us to win.
Yes, of course.
To prove something that we knew.
You
know?
Right.
Yeah. And you look at the airport now. I mean, how many other ways are they going to try to shut this thing down? I mean, it's just... When will they stop?
Well, that's right. Right. Well, there are a few neighbors, and the thing is that, you know, this airport was established first. I mean, it was onion fields in the 1920s, and planes used to land there early in the 1920s. The airport itself was, you know, officially established in 1931, and all of these people bought housing near the airport. I mean, the airport's been there longer than they've been there. Maybe some of the houses are older, but the current people have been there, you know, moved in near the airport. Now, I'm sympathetic to them, and they have some issues that they feel very strongly about, one of which is groundwater. I mean, they are concerned that the kind of fuel that planes use is seeping into the water, and the groundwater near the airport has been tested, And apparently there are, you know, there are particles in it that are higher than the surrounding area, you know, that they feel come directly from the fuel storage at the airport. There's also a noise level that there are many more planes flying in and out of there than there were when...
But the fact is that this is not LaGuardia.
No, you know? It's not LaGuardia.
This is, you know, a few flights a day that we're talking about. And these are not jets or commercial, you know, prop planes. So we're talking... This is maybe, you know, this is just a kind of local, rural airport. And it's necessary, actually, for evacuating people who need, you know...
Medical attention.
So, you know, and these people built houses. I'm defending the airport here. You know, the airport was there before they were, and they knew it.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to build their house next to the airport, you know.
Right.
Anyways, it's an editorial comment.
Well, it's just one of those things.
I know, Marshall, you're a pilot, aren't you?
I was a pilot. I learned to fly at the Kingston Ulster Airport. I was a traffic reporter. I got my solo license, and for 3 years, I spent probably more time in the air than any other pilot in life. I spent 2 hours in the morning in the air, and 4.5 hours in the air every day, 5 days a week. And the guy Hank Kramer, who owned the airport, said, "You know, looking at your logbook, you would think you were the most experienced pilot in the world." But I loved it. And that was a small airport that on one end had the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge, and on the other end had housing development. And everybody got along fine. Everybody got along fine.
Well, I do remember I had cousins who lived near the San Diego airport in California, and, you know, they knew which flights they were, you know, where you had to stop talking in the house. I mean, but these were jumbo jets that were landing.
We're talking about occasional flights. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I'm sorry. These people knew they were, anyways, I don't want to get into this.
You're right. The whole thing, there could be, there's 365 days a year. So let's say there's 1,000 flights a year. Guess what? That's two a day. Two and a half a day.
No, there are more than that.
There are
more than that because I have visited the airport and
But all I'm saying is you could come up with
there
a number.
Are planes going off all the time.
Yeah,
right.
I think the number they came up with was between 3,000 and 5,000. That's still, if you average it out over the course of 5 days a week, not even 7 days a week, that still only averages out to not more than 10. I mean, there's only so much air traffic that you can bring into a small airport. It's just one of those things that it was pre-existing, and the folks just should have known about it when they went there. That's the whole thing. But anyway,
I agree.
I digress.
The funny thing is that we have gotten, much to our surprise, or maybe we shouldn't be surprised, but we've gotten a number of comments and letters and emails, you know, all in defense of the airport. I think people are very nostalgic about this airport. This airport was started, or it was run by somebody who was very important in local aviation. Walt Kalaji, for whom the airport is now named, and he owned it for a long time. But he was apparently in World War One aviation, or World War Two. He was a kind of an ace pilot and somebody well known in the history of aviation who owned this airport for a long time and actually lived across the street from us. There were many people who love the airport who talk about, you know, just going out and watching the planes take off and the value of the airport to the community. So we have a very nice, we have a series called Then and Now that's done for us every other week by a local historian. And so we do have in our Then and Now series, we have a very nice sort of photo montage of the airport then and now, and it's called Then Now, the Great Barrington Airport. You can just search then and now, and it'll come up on the Edge, along with a lot of other very interesting then and now articles. This airport is much loved by a large section of the community. And last week, there are three of its neighbors, the most vociferous and the ones with the most resources, have once again bringing a suit against the airport to try to curtail its operations. And the Great Barrington Zoning Board, after hearing all of this, voted unanimously to deny their appeal. And they are accusing the neighbors of harassment. And they said, how many ways can you try to shut down this airport? I mean, it's gone too far. It's not a question of trying to correct it. They're trying to, the planning board said they're trying to shut it down.
All right. Well, we have to move on from the airport. We have to fly from the airport.
Okay.
We only have 3.5 minutes
right.
left, and I want to get to your weather guru, Nick Diller.
Nick Diller, right? Also known as Griller Diller, because he's a terrific. He grills terrific food. But he writes us a monthly report on the weather. Anyway, despite all of our perceptions, he said that March was much warmer and drier than usual. And he counted how many thousands of bears are there, David?
I don't know.
We have it in the article.
It was a winter for bears.
Yes. Well, he said there are two. There are 2,000 bears in the Berkshires, and they all came out of hiding or out of
hibernation
in March. And so they said, beware for your bird feeders and trash cans. And we have a bear who comes and gets David's bird feeders.
Right. You have to take him down at night.
Yeah. Yes, because we heard noise in the backyard, and we got out our flashlights through the windows, and there was this brown bear eating from our bird feeders.
Well, I pulled into work yesterday, and there was a bear just starting to take garbage out. We don't have any food garbage, so he would have been disappointed, but I honked the horn, and he went away.
Yes, the horns apparently work.
Well, Sometimes they work.
So,
they're persistent. I'll say one thing.
David went out in the backyard with pots and pans that he banged together, and the bear went away.
They're persistent little boogers, though. They really are.
They are persistent, and they get into, once they know that something is there, they come back.
They're just waking up, and they're really hungry.
Hungry, yes, yeah. I know. We should really put food out for them, but not necessarily bird feeders.
All right, we've got a minute and a half left. I want to talk about the lighter note we want to end with.
Yes. Well, we have this very nice series called Recollections of a Pittsfield Kid a man named Robert Connors is writing for us weekly now. And he grew up in Pittsfield. And he, and this is a nostalgic series for anyone of a certain age would remember, because this is not unique to Pittsfield. The kinds of experiences he had are the kinds of experiences that many of us had growing up when life was simpler and, neighborhoods were more cohesive.
And in this case, he recollects how he was a newspaper delivery boy.
Right,
and
for the Eagle.
For the Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield. And, of course, it's a shame, but the paper is no longer, newspapers are no longer delivered by paper boys.
Yeah.
I was a paper boy for the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
And also editor-in-chief of the Eagle.
Well, yeah, but when I was a kid, I delivered papers. It was the morning paper, too. So I had to get up really early. Had a little hot chocolate and got on my bike and rode down the street delivering papers to about 30 people, and then to to my delight, I had to go to the little local train station and sell papers at the morning commuter train.
There you go.
She did very well.
Yes. And, I must say that paper route helped put me through college.
All right. Well, memories.
And so he's talking about, you know, dogs, people, you know, having to deliver papers to a house that had German shepherds, and three large, fierce German shepherd dogs. And how he managed to, you know, drop off his paper.
All right. Well, those are just some of the stories in the BerkshireEdge.com.
Yeah.
And you'll find them there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Yes. You do.
All right.
Okay.
Well, take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Marshall. You
Bye-bye.
Bet.
Happy right. holiday.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge on air. The BerkshireEdge.com is where you'll find them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.